Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hello, all. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast To Be Named Later. I'm Chris, here with my co-host, Kelly. How you doing, Kelly?
Hey, Chris. How's it going, man? How's your week been?
Been all right, buddy. Been all right. Lot to cover. Since we last talked, I'm actually really excited for this episode. Had a couple cool things in sports happen. College playoff rankings, official ones have finally come out. So I'm pretty excited to get into it.
Yeah, we kind of left people with a bit of a cliffhanger last week. You and I were trying to work out a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. For those listening who have been, you know, waiting in suspense, Kelly and I were not able to work anything out. You know, he stood his ground, I stood mine, and unfortunately at this point, still sitting, well, one of us is still sitting on the same roster. Kelly has found a deal elsewhere, him and I weren't able to work it out.
Yeah, Chris tried to work me, and no work in this guy. So
I'll tell you, after listening back to the podcast, later, I was laughing listening to it. It came across a little bit like I was trying to work you. I promise you it wasn't my intention, but, you know, I'm a shrewd negotiator, and I'm trying to do the best I can for team me.
So Team Kelly, otherwise known as Lambeau Leap, did acquire or traded away Justin Herbert and one other wide receiver that he...
Metcalf, the dude you got from the dude.
Yeah, man. Gave him back for Dallas QB and...
Man, you don't even remember your own trade. This is hurtful. So you got Evans out of the deal.
Mike Evans. Yeah.
And I sent you a text congratulating you. We'll see. I mean, you know, all the players.
Yeah, you had a good line in that text. Do you remember what you wrote there?
Yeah, I said, early in the season from your brother, you got DK Metcalf for... A used tire that had just ran one good lap, and referring to Carson Wentz. You know, Carson Wentz comes out and has a great week one, and Metcalf gets off to a slow start, and you were there to save the day and grab Metcalf off him for Wentz, who's not even playing football now, and then proceeded to trade Metcalf back later in the season for Mike Evans.
Lest I think I'm so shrewd, let's remind everybody I am in last place.
For now, yeah. No, it was a good move. I was trying to get Herbert. I like Herbert. I obviously, your brother did as well, and so now he's got him, and we'll see how it plays out.
I do want to point out one other thing. When Chris wouldn't take my original deal, yeah, you tell me, buddy. How's that Derek Carr and Devontae Adams combo looking there in Las Vegas?
Oh, man, that was terrible. Just terrible. I think they got like 3 points combined. We'll get to our picks at some point, and we could talk about that game. I actually picked against the Raiders this coming week, and I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get.
I really thought that one had a shot this year, Kelly. I really did, man. They went to college together. They throw passes in the off season. You know, I really believe Derek Carr was a high quality starting NFL quarterback. And to this point in the season, I was just wrong, man. I mean, he's just not.
Yeah, we'll just finish this out real quick. But I'll just say this. I mean, it's too early to know, man. But you know, Devontae Adams. You don't get someone to throw him the ball well. He had goals of wanting to be all everything in football. This is legacy impacting if it continues.
Well, we'll see what plays out the rest of this year. And you know, I don't think McDaniels is going anywhere. And this is several years now with these types of performances from Carr. I mean, he had that one year where, I mean, you know, he was in the running for MVP. Unfortunately, got hurt heading into the playoffs, you know, but since then he just has not looked the part, and he's kind of had excuses. You know, Gruden was a 1970s coach with an old school mentality, and you know, it was easy to blame him, and the wide receivers, you know, were not great, and so he just kind of kept getting passes with people, you know. Remains to be seen, you know, and we'll see, you know, Carr still might be the guy. Well, now he's really out of excuses, I think, at this point, you know, and so
time's running out. In the offseason. He's like, I believe he was in the 2014 draft class.
Yeah, you know, so we'll see, man. So we'll see. I just think they might go a different direction, man.
I think so. So, speaking of football and competition, how are we looking on our picks? What I was down by 3. Where'd we end up?
You made up one game, buddy. So, you made up a game. You're sitting 2 back heading into this week now. So,
how many different do we have this week?
As it stands right now, we had 1, 2, 3. We had 4 different. You know, but... You know, some of these remain to be seen, bud. So let's talk about the ones that we currently have different. I'm sitting on the Atlanta Falcons, and you're sitting on the Los Angeles Chargers. You know, you got the favorite, and Chargers are probably the better team. But Atlanta's been playing really good football, man. I like what they're doing, running the ball and staying within themselves. So, you know, we're in a situation. So I make these picks to... To kind of give some context here, I make these picks in our pick 'em that we have. So we have a league that we compete in, you know, every year. And I'm kind of in the middle of the pack right now in the pick 'em. And so I've just made a decision that I'm going to take some chances, either in an effort to work my way up the ranks, or in an effort to win a week and get my money back. So either way, I'm going to take some chances. I don't like where I'm sitting, and I'm not going to just follow the herd. I want to take some shots. And Atlanta was one where I decided to, you know, they have a chance to win, and I don't think a lot of people will be on them.
Yeah. What else do we have different this week?
Jacksonville and Vegas. It might be just bitterness on my part. You know, on my fantasy team, I have Derek Carr and Davante Adams, and I don't think we got into that on air, Kelly. I think that was all off air, but I had offered Derek Carr, Davante Adams, and Miles Sanders, I think, was the deal for Herbert. It was for Mahomes. And Kelly didn't want to take that deal, and after 1 week, that was a good veto on that one, Kelly, because you would have got. And I even sent you a text saying, "Hey, good, no grab." My thinking, I don't think, was flawed in that. Hey, you got to take some chances, and Carr and Adams are
maybe they figured it out. I know though, right? I mean, in theory, hey man, you're getting points on every touchdown they score, but. I don't know. We already hit it, but I don't know what's up with the Raiders, man. They're just not there. All right, what else we got different?
Tampa Bay and the Rams. This is just a tough pick. Two teams that are reeling. You know, the previous Super Bowl winners that do not look the part at this point and didn't make any moves at the trade deadline either. So... some of the teams that I'm surprised. We can get into that if you want to. Some of the trades and the not trades is actually more surprising to me. The trades that happen aren't surprising, and they all kind of made sense. The ones that didn't happen are the ones that are the more surprising to me. The teams that didn't make moves. The teams that seems to me like, man, you got a couple glaring weaknesses. Our Packers for one, Tampa Bay and Rams are also teams that just kind of stayed where they're at, and it could be salary cap issues. I mean, I'm not, you know, in the front office, so there's a lot of moving parts, but kind of surprised they didn't try to improve their teams, because you would think that they would think they're not that far away. I mean, they just recently won Super Bowls each, so.
I told somebody this would have never happened, but I actually wouldn't, you know, I said, hey, man, the Packers are so far off, and they're, I don't see that they're going to turn it around. If they could have found a way with all the contracts and no trade clauses, I'm like, hey, man, you should go see what you can get for Aaron Rodgers. Go find out what you got in Jordan Love for the next 8 or 9 games, because you got to know, what are you going back to the well for another quarterback next year or not? That would have been the radical thing to do. But they should have done something to go get a wide receiver, because they're still going nowhere without it. And it's going to be, look, if you look at their schedule, I don't have every game memorized, but I was looking the other day. They have games against Dallas, Tennessee, the Vikings for sure. I mean, it's good. They're going to be hard pressed to go 500.
Well, they got a tough game just this week, and this is where the Packers are. I mean, we talked about this. I mean, at the time when we talked, I actually had the Lions picked. So I think I'll end up going with the Packers. I mean, I think they will be able to run the ball on the Lions, I don't know if they've fallen that far as to lose to the Lions, but that's kind of where they're at. They play the Cowboys, the Titans, the Eagles, even the Bears are looking better. You know, there's not many of these games that they're going to be favored in. At the Dolphins, against the Vikings, that's just kind of where they're at. And it doesn't make any sense to me, Kelly. It really doesn't, man. Just decide where you're at. Either make a move. You know, this settling for mediocrity and just, you know, staying pat. That I just don't get that, man. I guess... You know, maybe it's just my mentality, but if you're not a championship caliber team, which, man, you're not, right? Period. You're not right now. Then make the moves you think you need to make in order to become one, or see what you can get for Jair Alexander. See what you could. You know, Aaron Rodgers is gonna be a tough trade, man. He's got a big old fat contract. I don't know that they can move him, but you can move AJ Dillon. You know, you have some pieces that could get you, or Aaron Jones for sure. And I know you don't want to let go of some of these guys, but, we're not getting better next year either, man.
No. Well, I've always said hope is not a plan. And the challenge with what they got going on is, all right, this is not going to be another relax and we'll turn it around year. I mean, we're not seeing it. And, I mean, we've got eight games in now, and it's not going to change. So that is... And with a few more, like, in the old NFL, you never had trades at the deadline. With the new NFL, you do, because things are just moving faster. And it surprised me a little bit that they didn't do something meaningful. Similarly to Tampa Bay, I mean, Brady's, not got that much left in the tank, but he's still there, and they seem like they're closer. I just was a little surprised that, but none of those teams are showing that standing pat is the way to go either, because what they got is not going to get them anywhere. I mean, the Vikings are 6-1, dude, and the Packers are 3-5.
Yeah, and the Vikings look like, maybe not a 6-1 team, but they look like a winning football team, like a 70% win type of team. And right now, they're not going to stop.
Right now, the Packers look like the Packers of the 1970s and 1980s.
Well, and they have Thielen and Osborne and arguably, I mean, one of the best receivers in football in Jefferson. Irv Smith gets hurt, and they make a deal with the Lions to go get an all-pro tight end in T.J. Hockenson. The Vikings are making moves to hold their position or possibly even improve it, while the Packers are not. And the Vikings have a kind of a 2.5 game lead to begin with. Or 3.5 game lead to begin with. So, the Vikings are going to win that division, and the Packers are not. The Packers, I don't see how they make the playoffs. And so, just accept where you're at, man. That's fine. I mean, it's a business. We get it. But, either try your best to win, or, try your best to put yourself in a position to win later. And they didn't do either of those.
All right, well, the NFL, not a lot of great games this week, so we can, in my opinion, too many buys. We're going to touch on college football next, but we want to introduce a new segment first. We're going to try this out. Got to get some more fancy announcer type music and voices to introduce it going forward. But we're going to call it Get Off My Lawn.
I like it.
And it's going to be just those things that we're annoyed by or we just think need to stop. I'm going to go first, Chris, and you can react and you can tell me, you know, quit being a grump or, yeah, you're right, get off my lawn, I guess. I don't like the in-game interviews in sports. I mean, it's always had the coaches' interviews at the in the NBA, and then at halftime, the football coaches. But now here in the playoffs, we're having in-game interviews with players while the game's going on. I don't like it. I don't think it adds value. And, like, what are we going to have next? We're going to go to the theater, and halfway through the scene, we're going to ask the actor, well, how do you feel playing it tonight? Enough's enough. Get off my lawn and stop the in-game interviews.
So I got to tell you, Kelly, usually you and I line up pretty good, and we agree on a lot of things, actually. But this is one that I got to disagree with you, man. They don't bother me at all, certainly not to the point of get off my lawn. You know, baseball just doesn't move as fast, man. And you know, so you think about what Bryce Harper has to do after he just hit his home run, and pretty much Bryce Harper's just going to sit around, and he's going to watch other guys bat until there's three outs, and then he's going to go out and play in the field after that. So, you know, you're not distracting Bryce Harper. It's not like he's a quarterback who's looking at his iPad on the sideline trying to get coverages before he has to go out and play offense again. It's not like there's you're pulling a coach away in a basketball game that should be talking with his players about, you know, we're going to switch to the zone, you know, next possession, guys. Next quarter, we're switching back to the zone defense. You know, there's nothing for really for Bryce Harper to do but high-five people. So, you know, you're not pulling him away from his work. He did his work. He jacked one over the fence, and you know, people want to hear from him. And you know, in other sports, I can see what you're saying. The stuff we get, like, as coaches are heading to halftimes is rarely it's almost verbatim, coach by coach by coach. You know, we're going to have to execute better. I just need the offensive line to give us more time. We got to get more pressure on their quarterback. We got to get back to running the ball. It's blah, blah, blah. It's all the same shit. And really, that coach doesn't want to be there at all. You watch these baseball interviews, man, and the guys are happy to do it, it seems like. You know, I could take or leave them, I guess, but I don't think it hurts in any way. And, you know, I'm certainly not fired up about it myself. So,
you know, maybe it comes from my old days. At one point, you know, I just feel in theater there's a concept of an invisible wall, right? And you're not supposed to cross that, right, where the actor doesn't come out of character. I guess I like the competition. I love the sound of the game, and I love what they're doing with that. But I just feel that when you start asking questions of the players during the game, it just takes it away a little bit. It's, you know. So, how about you, Chris? I guess for that one, you'd say, lighten up, Kelly. what do you want to tell people to get off your lawn about this week?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and I don't have a specific incident to refer to, but in general, I'll tell you what's been bothering me recently, man, and it seems to be compiling. Like every time I see something, there was a play in. I can't remember which game I was watching, buddy, but. Basically, there was a punt, and, you know, there's a dude just kind of, like, hanging out around the ball. And then he ends up getting pushed into the ball, and then the other team recovers, and it's first down. And it's like, dude, what are you doing, man? You know, if you remember back, Donovan McNabb didn't know that you could tie. And the game came to an end, and they ended in a tie. And at the post game, Donovan was like, wow, I didn't even know you could do that. And it's like, you know, more and more, I swear, there's a play. Who was that? Was that Randall Cobb, I think, that stepped on the sideline before he fielded a kickoff? You remember there was a Packers player.
Yeah, man. I think it was him.
I think it was Cobb that knew that, hey, if I step on the sideline before anyone's touched this ball and then I touch it, technically the ball is out of bounds and we can get the ball at the 40. And that's kind of what I expect for the money that you're paid as a professional athlete. I expect Chris Webber to know how many timeouts he has left. Now, he wasn't getting paid. Well, he was getting paid back then, but he wasn't supposed to be getting paid when he was at Michigan. But, you know, I expect for the kind of income that you bring in, for you to be a professional and know the rules, man. I expect a head coach of an NFL caliber football team to understand clock management, basic clock management, when you need to call timeouts, and know that before the play comes to an end. Don't let 17 seconds run off and then realize, oh, hey, you know what? Dang, the clock's still running. We should probably stop that. So if I had to get off my lawn, I get off my lawn to the people who don't know their job, you know, and especially at this level, man. If you just started at Starbucks and you don't know the difference between a latte and a macchiato, I'll give you some time to figure it out. But if you're paid 6, 7, 8 figures, you should know your job, man. So that'd be my get off your lawn, get off my lawn is people who just don't understand the rules of the games that they play professionally.
I'll have to agree with you on that one, Chris. Every once in a while, a mistake can happen, but I do think that more often we're seeing and more power to, you know, again, I will say this, Aaron Rodgers has always been great about this, right? Just paying attention and knowing how all the rules work and using them to your advantage where, you know, he's notorious for getting the snap off and catching guys off sides or all that, and the stuff that we talked about with the Packer player, just whatever. It's two things. It's doing things that are boneheaded and cause problems, and then that's – or not, you know, the flip side of using the rules the right way and taking advantage, man.
Yeah, DJ Moore taking his helmet off. You know, scores what should have been a game-winning touchdown. I mean, they had to kick the extra point still. But, he takes his helmet off and gets flagged 15 yards. They missed the extra point. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, man. You make too much money. This is too high-profile a job for you to be making these kinds of mistakes or behaving in this selfish manner. I guess it could be either. Either one's wrong. But the DJ Moore play for Carolina, you know, catches a touchdown, should have been cause for celebration, which, you know, kick an extra point, you win the game. Still a little bit of time, but for all intents and purposes, they would have won the game right there with an extra point. He backs them up, they miss it, and then they end up losing in overtime. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, man. You know, don't be selfish. Give your team every possible opportunity to win the game. And, the guys who don't do that, man, it's all kinds of frustrating for me. I'll tell you one that's a small one that, you know, if I was a coach, this would be a no-brainer. You'd be running laps if you didn't do it. The place where there's a ball bouncing around. And, I know whistles blow and everything, but with today's new age, with replay, I don't see any reason not to pick up a ball that's on the ground. You know, anything within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, if it's bouncing around, pick it up and hand it to the official. It takes no effort on your part. And every once in a while, you see one that they go back and look, and, oh, man, that actually was a fumble. But we have no clear recovery, so the ball goes back to the offense. And you see three defensive guys walking around the ball, and it's like, dude, just pick it up. Who cares? I mean, you might do it 200 times. And all you're doing is hand it back to the official, 199 of them. But if there's a ball on the ground, pick it up and get a clear recovery. And it's you know, even if it's a half of 1% chance that it benefits us, it's still a half of 1%, man. Let's take it.
So your comment, Chris, about guys just walking around and all that leads to a couple of questions that maybe you can, describe what you see. I'm curious. So let's say that, you know, whoever we want to pick, I'll still say Aaron Rodgers, you know, throws a pass, and it's not a short pass. So let's say it's, you know, longer than 10 yards. When he lets it go, what is he doing after that?
I mean, lately he's picking himself up off the ground. But in general, let's assume he wasn't in the process of being tackled when he let go of the ball. Then he would just be watching, man. I mean, you know, he'd be – generally those guys are in pretty congested areas. And, you know, he's going to take a couple steps to the right or the left or, you know, wherever he believes a body is. He's going to try and remove himself from the presence of that large body and give him a safe place to put his legs. And then at that point, he's just watching. So, generally offensive linemen will start making their way down the field a little bit, you know, slowly just kind of walking in the direction of the end zone that they're heading to. All other skill position players will slowly make their way in the direction that the pass was thrown. Let me put it this way, man. Even if a ball is hit to left center, the right fielder is still heading over that way. You know, and obviously, you know, he's never going to back up a left fielder, right? I mean, you should hope not anyway. I guess unless the center fielder and the left fielder run into each other, then there needs to be another person there to pick up the ball and throw it in. But, you know, the flow of all bodies generally head towards the ball in all sports, really. I mean, come to think of it. I mean, no one's going the other way, right? Even if a puck's heading down the ice, nobody's turning and going back the other way towards their own goal. And in football's kind of the same way, man. When a ball's let go, you just kind of see all 10 other people slowly making their way towards the ball. Some people might be moving faster than others. And, you know, the guys who are doing it right, Kelly, are hustling. And actually, there was a play by Micah Parsons where he was out of the play, dude. And actually, the one he just did, there's two plays. He's an unbelievable football player, I'll tell you that, man. I mean, the motor on that guy, the effort that guy puts out, play in and play out every single play. I'm not a Cowboy fan by any means, but holy cow, dude, do I like that guy. But there was a play where he was out of it, man. I mean, he was 15 yards away, but he hustled. He ran to the ball, even though he was 15 yards behind the play. And you know, after the running back was done doing all his ooking and juking and trying to dodge people, you know, Mike Parsons is running in a straight line. Meanwhile, the running back is taking side steps and jump cuts, and Mike Parsons is catching up to him, and he ends up tackling the guy at the 1 yard line, saved a touchdown, and on the very next play, there was a fumble and Dallas recovered, and so that team didn't score at all, and it was all a result of the hustle that Parsons put in. And just this past week, actually, that was a crazy play where was it a pick or a fumble? Can't remember. Parsons, shoot, I can't remember the beginning of it. But anyway, Justin Fields ended up jumping over Micah Parsons and just ever so carefully didn't touch him in any possible way. Parsons got up and ran in for a touchdown. And replayed it, you know, 42 times. And, yeah, it turns out he just never touched him. He just hurtled right over him. And you know, Parsons was on the hustle. And that's the kind of stuff, man, that I want to see. That was, you know, say what you want about Pete Rose and his gambling and all the things that have happened after his career and the way he's handled everything. The way the dude played his sport is how all people should play sports, in my mind. You know, that type of hustle, that type of effort, the blast in the catcher in an all-star game. You know, that's what I expect, man. That's how I played. That's how I was taught. That's just what I believe you should do is play with maximum effort at all times. And it's frustrating to watch guys dogging it, especially, you know, what they're getting paid.
Well, these guys aren't dogging it, but we got the first, and now they are. Some of them are getting paid. We've got the first college football playoff rankings out.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited, man.
Along with that, we've got a pretty big game this week. What's your take, and what do you think about the rankings? It's got Tennessee, kind of different than the poll, because it's got Tennessee, then Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson and Michigan are the top five, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, Tennessee, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, Michigan, Alabama, TCU. Top seven, I'll give you right there. And I went all the way down to TCU because, you know, so there's two that I can't have a problem with any of these. You know, you got one, two, three, four, five undefeated teams in the top five, and then you got Alabama, then TCU. You know, you could rank them any which way. This will all sort itself out. Ohio State's going to play Michigan. Tennessee's going to play Georgia. And then either Tennessee or Georgia likely will play Alabama, blah, blah, blah. You know, so all this stuff will work itself out on the field for the most part. And I will say, since they went to this, the college football playoff rankings, they've gotten it pretty right. I mean, you know, you can debate. I'll like it when they get some more teams in, just because I would like to see, you know, like the Philadelphia Phillies, man. They wouldn't even been there had they not expanded the playoffs. And look at the show that they're putting on, right? And I'd like to see some more teams be able to catch fire and late in the season and make a magical run. But I think we can feel confident that the four teams that do make it when the time comes that they'll feel good. But I'll tell you what I like, man. I like that they put Tennessee first. And didn't just go with the old guard, you know what I mean? They basically wiped the slate clean, took a fresh look at everything. I think you could have made a legitimate case for any of those top three, you know, Georgia, Ohio State, and Tennessee. But to me, Tennessee's resume is the best. Ohio State has looked phenomenal on the field, offense, defense. They look really, really good. Had they been number one, I wouldn't have had an argument with it, but Tennessee has proved it on the field, man. They shellacked LSU in Baton Rouge. They beat Alabama. You know, they deserve it, man. And so I'm happy with these rankings. The only one, like I said, Clemson, I think, got a pass just for being Clemson and being undefeated. They have not been overly impressive. You know, I'd say TCU, Alabama, and Michigan have all looked better than Clemson, to be honest with you, to this point in the season. But I think them and Alabama kind of get like these free passes just because they are who they are and they've been where they've been, you know.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with. Actually, I like similar to what you just said. I do like that Tennessee. Again, we'll find out Saturday when they play. You know, if it's backed up, but I think on the field of play, Tennessee's looked stronger across the board than Georgia so far. So I'm happy to see that. You know, we talked briefly about this off the air, and I'm like, you read them out, and I brought it up, and I'm like, Clemson? I got to be honest. Again, it will sort itself out, but I just don't see how Clemson, Michigan, to me, should be ahead of Clemson for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would argue Michigan, Alabama, and TCU. So Clemson's played Georgia Tech, Furman, Louisiana Tech. They played Wake Forest, NC State, Boston College, Florida State, and Syracuse. And they've won them all. They beat Wake Forest when they were number 21. They beat NC State when NC State was number 10. And they beat Syracuse when they were number 14. You know, they got, you know, they beat Furman 35-12. I mean, good on you. Louisiana Tech 48-20. Okay, you know, good job. But Michigan's definitely played the tougher schedule and looked better doing it.
Yeah, I've told you before, I thought Michigan this year was looking pretty good. They still are. And I think they're seeing what we wanted to see, or Michigan fans for sure have wanted to see for years with Jim Harbaugh as coach. You know, but obviously they got to play it. There's always the game against Ohio State to see. I'm really looking forward to when we get more teams in as well, because honestly, pull that up again and just go past the top seven. Go all the way down to 12. If you just took the top 12, who are the next five?
Then it goes Oregon, who's actually coming on really strong. So Oregon lost, it was week one at Georgia, got handled 49-3.
Yeah, they got shellacked.
Yeah, and then, but they've looked pretty good since then, man.
They've looked impressive since then.
I'll tell you what their scores are since then. 70, 41, 44, 45, 49, 45, 42. So offensively, they're beating people by 20 a game. The points they've given up are 14, 20, 41. That was the barn burner at Washington State. They give up 27, 22, 30, and 24. I actually picked UCLA to win that game in Oregon. I thought UCLA looked really good. And then I watched that game and realized, wow, Oregon whooped them. Now, you know, it was up there in Eugene and all, but
I actually watched that game too. I lived in Oregon for 5 years, so kind of like the Ducks a little, and I also enjoy their radio announcers. They're good at what they do, and they took care. I actually thought that game would be closer than it was, but they just took care of UCLA.
Yeah, and so Oregon sitting at 8. You actually got 3 Pac-12 teams in here. So Oregon sitting at 8, USC at 9, LSU at 10, Ole Miss at 11, and UCLA at 12.
You know, now I know the formula for the playoffs probably wouldn't put those exact 12, but wow, what an exciting end of the season tournament that would be with those 12 teams as opposed to the top 4, because like right now it's going to be tough for Oregon to get in. As an example, yet they could be as hot as anybody just because of where that one loss is really going to hurt them, and they're not going to be able to jump up to the other teams. Even, you know, they could win the Pac-12 championship game, and probably who they play, I think right now it would probably end up being UCLA still, maybe USC. But I don't think it's going to be enough to jump them up. But wouldn't you love to see them have a shot?
Yeah. Hey, refresh my memory. So in that 12, if 4 get a bye, right?
Yes.
And then so it would be right now, if as it sits, this would be UCLA would play Michigan, Alabama would play Ole Miss, TCU would play LSU. And Oregon would play USC the way it's set up right now, and all of those games would be intriguing, man. And you know, there's some, if the, I don't know if they would shimmy the numbers around a little bit so conference teams don't match up. I tend to think even if they didn't say they did, they actually would. But all of those teams would, you know, you'd be excited about the team coming out that won that game, right? And that team would feel good about it itself. And obviously, it's going to have a tough hill to climb, and it's going to have to go play a better team. You know, that's why the other team's got the bye. But, man, they'd be feeling really good. You know, they got a win under their belt. They're advancing, and just the excitement from it. And undoubtedly, a team, maybe even two, that come out of that first 8 is going to win the following week. It's going to knock one of those other teams out, you know, year in and year out.
I think it's going to be good. I mean, frankly, I'm done with the bowls, dude. I don't need to see 35 bowl games anymore. Most of them aren't competitive. They're boring. You know, fine, there's the playoff games are exciting, but out of the 30 or how many ever bowls it is again, most of them are duds at best. And you know, look, yeah, my Wisconsin Badgers have gone to one like for something like 20 years in a row, and fine, it's a time for people around here to get out of the snow for a weekend, but they're just not competitive or interesting.
Yeah, agreed, man. And just,
you give me that slate right there, it's gonna be a weekend of football.
Yep, absolutely.
And then I got another weekend after that when you bring in the other guys, and I think that'd be compelling.
Yep.
Speaking of bringing in the other guys, well, something happened not too long ago in racing. It was a little bit like bringing in the other guys, because one racer brought in basically video game play of auto racing onto the physical racetrack.
Dude, I gotta tell you, man, this is without a doubt, I was actually trying to think of some of the other like crazy cool things that I've seen in sports, like the Boise State Oklahoma football game, if you remember that. It was just like, holy cow, I cannot believe what I just saw. You know, the bands on the field, you know, some of the crazy things in sports. And I, dude, this is one of the top things I've ever witnessed in sports, and I watched it live. I'm a bit of a NASCAR fan. Picked up that sport, you know, about a decade or so ago, and I like it, man. So I guess I understand it's not for everybody, but I enjoy it. And they're in their playoffs, and Ross Chastain, what he did is just like I've never seen it. I've never seen it before, man. And in all of sports, it's one of my favorite things I've ever witnessed. I DVR'd the race, and I've watched it back 15 times probably, just to watch it again and again because I just love it. And then the post race, you know, they give you some shots of the pit, and then, you know, him getting out of his car and taking his helmet off, and the you know, the grin on his face, just like it's just priceless, man. I mean.
Well, can you go step back a minute? And I know I saw on Twitter and other places more like everybody. Oh, I can't believe what I just saw! You got to see this. But I actually played the audio myself several times, and you hear the announcers don't even know what to say happened, and you don't hear much audio. So, take us through what you saw, Chris.
Yeah, this is one of those I got to say, Kelly. It's hard to even describe, and. You know, and I know right with the right commentators, man, and the guys kind of outlining it. You know, it's kind of like a book versus a movie, right? You can picture it, you can feel like you're there. But I got to tell you, this is one, man, that you know, you got to see the thing to. I can't even put it into words. So Ross Chastain, I'll lay out just a little bit, man. I won't dive into all the moving parts, but he's fighting for a playoff spot. This is the transfer race, right? So NASCAR's playoff has broke down, and this is the last chance he has to get in. And he's in a fight with Denny Hamlin, who at the moment, on the last lap, had moved ahead enough cars where Denny Hamlin was going to go race for a championship. So four drivers are going to get to race for a championship, and you got to be one of the top four in order to do it. And Ross Chastain at the moment on the final lap was not in a position to advance to the finals. Okay, Denny Hamlin was. And Ross Chastain was in a position on the track where there was kind of nobody in front of him. So you get a point for every car you pass. Well, Ross Chastain really didn't have any more cars that were, like, catchable. And Denny Hamlin had passed the two that he was fighting with, and it was going to be difficult for them to get by him. So he was going to stay in his position, and Ross Chastain likely was going to stay in his position. So this is the equivalent of a Hail Mary, man. I mean, and it's just throwing it up and hoping for the best. So, you know, Ross Chastain played the role of Doug Flutie and just heaved it. And visually, man, it's hard to describe. Okay, so when these guys are running around the track at Martinsville, they're generally at the bottom. The bottom's where you want to be. It's a preferred line. And, you know, if you get going too fast around a corner, I don't care if you're in NASCAR or Formula One or if you're in the Volvo, you know, heading down the 41. If you take a corner too fast, you're going to slide off the road. You know, it's just physics. And so you can only go around a corner so fast before, you know, you slide up the racetrack and you go into the wall. So what Chastain did was he just decided going into the third corner that he was just going to gun it and use the wall to keep him on the track and just keep his car going forward as fast as he could. And I got to tell you, man, I mean, even professional drivers, I've listened to some of the post race and the guys are just shaking their heads going, well, I mean, good on them, man. I mean, I don't even know what to say. So I've heard the analogy to video games. So in a video game, you can pull this move off, right? So in a video game, you can just punch it and the car will slide up against the rail. You know, the wall is strong enough to hold you on the track, right? You're not going to fly into the stands or out into the parking lot. You'll stay on the track, and the cars are powerful enough to keep moving forward. And so that's what he did. He said, I grabbed fifth gear, and I just went for it. And, dude, he was going, man, like he was in fast forward. And I watched the race live, and I watched the replay in real time, and I watched the replay in slow motion. And I swear it looks like his car is in fast forward, you know, like you hit the remote two times and we're going through the game like at two times speed, you know, but only his car. And so he's just bouncing off the wall the whole way around the corner, man. And the whole right side of his car was shredded when he got to the finish line. But he passed five cars, which at Martinsville, it's hard to pass one car. But he passed five cars on the final lap, went from 10th to 5th in like half a lap by this move that he made. And, you know, it's just cool, man. And if you know the story behind him, you know, he's kind of an underdog story. You know, he shouldn't even be here, man. His team does not have the money that the Hendricks and the Joe Gibbs and the other race teams have. You know, he himself was not even supposed to be here. He was supposed to race in the Xfinity lost his ride and got this chance. And they've made the most of it, man. And now he's in the final four. And I don't know if his car is going to have enough speed for Phoenix, you know, to win it or not. But I'll tell you what, man, he definitely won the fans over with his move and just giant cojones, man. I mean, you know, it's one thing to do it on a video game, Kelly. You know, where if you crash and you blow up, you just, you know, you reset and you start the race over again. This, you know, this is a real human in a real vehicle going real fast, man. And, you know, that, you know, touching back on some of the stuff we were talking about a little bit earlier about guys, you know, in your sport doing whatever it takes to win. I mean, if this ain't the epitome of doing whatever it takes to win, I really don't know what is, man.
You know, and it's really interesting, Chris, because I know I don't even know how those guys get in the car and do what they do, to be honest. I mean, I know the safety's improved a lot, and I mean, there's been a lot, you know, some obviously tragedies, but wow, man, and you would hear about, I mean, these guys intentionally, you know, get behind another guy to draft off him, or they're running. The thing I always like, you hear the two guys talking, oh, I just went and bumped them a little bit. You're going 200 miles an hour down the speedway. And you're playing bumper car, and you know, just a little bit.
Yeah, no, they're professionals, man. I mean, the ability that they have to maintain control of a vehicle going at those speeds. I mean, just on the edge for that amount of time. You know, it's not one corner or two corners, man. I mean, this is an entire race that they're, you know. Sometimes zero. I mean, they're touching. They're 0 inches apart at times. You know, going, you know, anywhere from 150 to over 200 miles an hour in NASCAR. Yeah, it's amazing, man.
Speaking of going in 200 miles an hour, it wasn't 200, but definitely a lot of balls were leaving Philadelphia's ballpark last night. We're recording this on Wednesday at more than 100 miles an hour, huh?
Yeah, they got a hold of McCullers, man, you know, I got to give the Phillies a lot of credit, dude. I mean, that's an easy team to like, and, you know, I think the rain delay helped them a lot. You know, I think it definitely helped with their pitching, you know, the they were getting a hold of balls, man, I mean, they put it all over the Astros yesterday. I think, you know, first time okay, second time okay, you know, okay, third time, but the game is still potentially in reach because a lot of that happened early. And so I bet from the Astros perspective, you know, they probably still felt like, hey, man, we can come back, dude. We can score a run. Okay, we can score five. Okay, we're not scoring seven. And I think at some point they just had to realize, like, okay, this has gotten out of hand. But yeah, they were leaving the yard yesterday, that's for sure.
That's an interesting series. This is kind of the thing I like about baseball, and especially in these World Series or these longer series like this, where, you know, every day is like a little drama, and you just don't know where it's going to come back because, right, first game looks like Houston's, you know, in the driver's seat, and that changes up. And then next game, you know, Houston takes care of business. And then you come back here. Tonight will really be interesting because, you don't want to, you know, it's overused in sports when they talk about must win. But clearly, you know, Philly wins this and they're looking good for taking the whole World Series. But again, here, if Houston wins it, now it's, last night is all, you know, all over because now you're all even up again, and it's best of three.
Yeah, I mean, this game's huge. I mean, obviously, whoever wins this game – well, put it, I shouldn't say whoever. If Philly wins this game, with the way they've been playing throughout the playoffs, it's hard to believe that they're going to lose three in a row. Now, you know, Astros might be able to do that, but, you know, and you would think Philly would – you know, is in a great position, man. They got Nola going tonight, who's been their superstar stud all season, but really has not – pitched well in the playoffs. And then Javier, who you know, has really turned it on in the playoffs. So, you know, it's kind of, we'll see, man. But if the Phillies win tonight, that's going to be a tall task, man. They'll be up 3-1. They get another game at home. You know, I don't know, man. I mean, it'd be a tough ask to have the Astros come back. Now, if the Astros win it, you know, now it's still a series. The Phillies aren't out of it. But I think if the Phillies win it, I think the Astros might be.
You know, you talked about in the going back to that first game, and right? What's up with Justin Verlander there in playoffs, man?
Yeah, it's like Clayton Kershaw, dude. I mean, you know, it's bizarre. I mean, these dominant pitchers that can't get wins in the playoffs. You know, it's bizarre to me, man. Verlander's, I mean, dude, he's one of the best pitchers of our generation, you know, of the last generation, and you know, he just hasn't been good, man. And I mean, he hasn't pitched terrible necessarily, but the team doesn't win, you know. And Kershaw's kind of the same way, you know. He just, you know, he doesn't always pitch bad, man. It's not like he gets lit up, but the team doesn't win on the games when he starts.
Yeah, it's those are two examples, and they're both, I mean, they're definitely two of the best pitchers of our generation, and definitely in the of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would think they would just show up to the postseason and be dominant, but it just hasn't been that way.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see tonight, man.
Looking forward. You know, I watched the game last night. Wow, that again. Here's when I talk about that sound, man. I can't even imagine what that felt like to be in that stadium. That crowd was off the charts.
Oh, they were on fire, you know. And you know, you hear about that, you know, there's different places, man. I mean, I know you've been to a bunch of sporting events, and you know, they make reference to it, and you can't separate it unless you're there, you know. And oh yeah, it's a really loud place, those you know, fans are rabid. And but until you're there and watch, you know, like I've been to Seahawks Stadium in a primetime game, and you know, it is you feel it like inside of you how loud it is, you know, the vibrations of all those voices and stuff. And I gotta imagine that stadium last night felt something like that, man. Just, you know, they say it's electric, and you know, it's all well and good when you're saying that with words, but when you're there, man, you feel it. Like, it really does feel like you have electricity running through you, man. It
does. I mean, the closest way I could describe it, and it's really hard, because I've been to a fair number of sporting events and concerts. It's like, imagine, you know, when the concert, like when you feel the bass going through you. And the crowd's electric, but at a concert that typically doesn't last the whole concert. It does for a while, but, you know, the band slows it down a little or does something. When you're at some sporting events, because I've been to some, and I'll tell you this, man, actually, it was CenturyLink then, I guess. You, unless you've been there for a game, and you cannot describe how loud it is.
Yeah, and it is true. It's every defensive possession, man. And then, I mean, it's crazy loud throughout. But you know, anytime the opposing team has the ball, it's loud for the whole freaking time, man. And then if you get to third down, well, then they really ramp it up, and it's just like, dude, I mean, earplugs required, man.
I mean, I've been to Packer games, and it's loud there, but I'm just there. It is not the same, and Obviously, when they built the stadium, they did a few things to have the sound reverberate, but I've heard a lot of loudness. I mean, I like that feeling of it is electric or whatever, you know, when you're at a show or a sporting event and you feel that it's the ninth inning. And I remember this, too. I was he never got the due nationally that he should have, and his career kind of ended in a just fizzled. But you want to talk about electric, man. When Felix Hernandez for the Mariners was in his heyday, that was electric as well. I mean, Seattle marketing did this thing they called King's Court out in the outfield, sell some sections, and people would hold up cards and, you know, just yelling out the KKK, but just when you got a dominant pitcher and they're on and the crowd is up on their feet and just yelling. I mean, it's one of the fun parts of sports.
Yeah, and I think the Philly fans are getting to feel it right now. No matter what happens tonight, I think, you know, they're going to feel good about themselves. You know, even if they don't come away with a win tonight, you know, they're still at 2-2. They got another game at home. Hopes are going to be high. I think the Astros are in the desperation mode, you know, and we'll see if that plays in, man. I mean, you know, like I said, the Phillies have their ace who hasn't really been an ace in the playoffs, and the Astros have a guy who kind of has. So we'll see how it plays out. But, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt the team that needs this one more is the Astros. So,
well, by the time we talk next week, we'll kind of know how this all shook out. As always, Chris, another great week, and we'll see where all this stuff ends up. Lot to look forward to this weekend in sports again. We got, you know, some NFL stuff, that Tennessee. I hope that Tennessee-Georgia game lives up to the hype. We'll know who the World Series champion is, and then we'll start to see off-season moves. Kind of going to be curious to see how quickly Aaron Judge signs somewhere.
Yeah, there's a... I'm really looking forward. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the NASCAR. That championship is this week. The Tennessee-Georgia game is just a monster. There's so much on the line for that game. So the winner of that game is going to – I mean, they're not going to lose twice, right? So the winner of that game gets to go to the SEC championship game and kind of probably punch a ticket to the playoffs, depending on – they may need help if they lost in the championship game, but – they have an inside track to a playoff seat, even if they lose in the SEC championship game. So, but the loser's out, man. The team that loses this game is not going to have enough teams on their schedule to fight their way back in, most likely. So, the stakes for this game arguably are even higher than the SEC championship game will be, because the path for the losing team just won't exist.
Yeah, so. you're 100% right. Where, I mean, pretty much, look, if you get to the SEC championship game, whether you win or lose, you got a good shot at making the Final Four.
Yeah, and then, you know, we'll see how the other – I mean, there's other games to be played, and we'll see, you know, how they all play out and everything. And there might not be a spot for both teams. But the team that loses this game, this is an elimination game for the loser.
It's definitely a tough road. I don't, unless all kinds of crazy stuff happened there, I don't see a good path for that. And, hey, you know, I like to see good games, so I don't have a – Tennessee's obviously in a little bit more of the upstart, obviously, here, but I don't have a – I just like to see good games. I'd probably lean towards Tennessee because why not? They're, you know, the newer story. But either team that makes it forward will be good, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, Georgia's an 8-point favorite. I mean, they're supposed to win this game, and being at home is big. But I'm pulling for the Vols for sure. You know, I just think they're a cool story, man. I think they've looked the part, and I just know if they don't, Georgia's been in the championship game, man. Georgia's, you know, they've been riding at the top for a little bit. Tennessee has not, and yeah, I kind of like the same thing in the Big Ten, man. I pull for the Badgers, but you know, Ohio State's been kind of the king of that conference for a while, and a national powerhouse. And I'd love to see Michigan get past them, and let's see some new blood out there, man. That's my feeling anyway.
Yeah, I like to shake it up. Well, yep. We'll shake it up again next week, and thanks everyone for listening to another episode of the podcast to be named later, and thanks, Chris, always, as we say every week, really enjoy chatting with you.
Yeah, you too, Kelly, always, buddy. Have a good week, my friend.